skeleton. Or maybe it's still alive and trying to escape. Those unappetizing tremors, its attempt to slowly wiggle off my plate. If I look away, I wonder if the thing will pick up the pace and try crawling into one of the air vents. I want to vomit.
Eat,
Cedric's raw commands. He called himself my grandfather. That thought makes me more nauseous than the food. I don't want to believe him. This could be just like the visions, some sick game meant to get under my skin. But why go through all the trouble? Why bring me here? Why not just kill me? Cedricus Ross sits across from me, all the way down at the opposite end of the ridiculously large banquet table that looks as if it was carved from lava. His chair is throne-like, made of the same dark stone as the table, but definitely not large enough to accommodate the mammoth warlord we fought at Dulce Base. No, at some point when I wasn't watching, Cedricus Ra shrunk down to a more reasonable 8 feet tall, so that he could comfortably hunch over his own plate of Mogadorian cuisine. Could his size changing be a legacy? It works really similarly to my ability to alter my age.
You have questions,
Cedricus Ra rumbles, observing me. What are you? I blurt out. He cocks his head.
What do you mean, child?
You're a Mogadorian, I say, trying not to sound too frantic. I'm Lorik. We can't be related.
Ah, such a simplistic idea. Human, Lorik, Mogadorian. These are just words, dear one, labels. Centuries ago, my experiments proved that our genetics could be changed. They could be augmented. We needn't wait for Lorien to gift us with legacies. We could take them as we needed them, utilizing them like any other resource.
Why do you keep saying we? I ask, my voice cracking. You're not one of us. Cedricus Ross smiles thinly.
I was Lorik once. The 10th Elder. Until the time came when I was cast out. Then I became what you see before you. The powers of a guard combined with the strength of a Mogadorian. An evolutionary improvement.
My legs start shaking under the table. I hardly listen after he mentions the 10th Elder. I remember that from Creighton's letter. He said my father was obsessed with the fact that our family once had an elder. Could that have been Cedricus Ra? You're crazy, I say. And you're a liar.
I am neither of those things,
he replies, patiently.
I am a realist, a futurist. I altered my genetics to become more like them, so they would accept me. In return for their fealty, I helped their population grow. I brought them back from the brink of extinction. Joining the Mogadorians gave me a chance to continue the experiments that so frightened the Lorik. Now, my work is almost finished. Soon all life in the universe, Mogadorian, human, even what's left of the Lorik, will be improved under my gently guiding hand.
You didn't improve life on Lorien, I snap back. You killed them all.
They opposed progress,
Cedricus Ross states, like the death of a whole planet is nothing. You're sick. I'm not afraid to talk back to him. I know that he won't hurt me. Not yet, at least. He's too vain for that. Wants too badly to convert another Lorik to the cause. He wants things to be just like in my nightmare. Since I woke up here, he's had a team of female Mogadorians attending to me. They dress me in this long black formal gown, very similar to the one I was wearing in my vision. It itches like crazy, and I have to keep tugging at the neckline. I stare openly at his hideous face, hating myself for trying to find some resemblance. His head is bulbous and pale, covered in intricate Mogadorian tattoos. His eyes are empty and black, just like the Moogs. His teeth are filed down and sharp. If I look hard enough, I can almost see the Loric cast to his features, like crumbling architecture buried beneath the paleness and gross Moog artwork. Cetricus Ra looks up from his food, meeting my gaze. Facing him head-on still gives me a chill, and I have to force myself not to turn away.
"Eat," he says again. "You need your strength."
I hesitate for a moment, not sure how far I should push my insubordination, but also really not wanting to sample the Moog version of sushi. I make a point of dropping my fork so that it clatters loudly against the side of my plate. It echoes in the high-ceilinged room, Cetricus Ra's private dining area, which is only slightly more furnished than the other cold rooms aboard the Anubis. The walls are covered in paintings of Mogadorians bravely charging into combat. The ceiling is open, providing a breathtaking view of Earth, the planet imperceptibly rotating below us.
"Do not push me, girl," Cetricus Ra growls. "Do as you're told."
I push my plate away from me. "I'm not hungry." He studies me, a condescending look in his eyes, like a parent trying to show a bratty child how patient they can be.
"I can put you back to sleep and feed you through a tube, if you prefer. Perhaps you'd be better mannered when I next woke you, once the war was won," he says. "But then we wouldn't be able to talk. You wouldn't be able to enjoy your grandfather's victory firsthand. And you wouldn't be able to entertain your futile notions of escape."
I swallow hard. I know we'll be going down to Earth eventually. Cetricus Ra isn't going to have his warships orbit Earth for a while and then float peacefully away. There's going to be an invasion. I've been telling myself that once we land, I'd have a chance to run for it. Obviously, Cetricus Ra knows that I'd rather die than be his prisoner, or his co-ruler, or whatever he's got in mind. But, from the smug look on his face, he doesn't seem to care. Maybe he thinks he can brainwash me before we return to Earth. "How am I supposed to eat with your nasty face right there?" I ask him, hoping to see his self-satisfied look falter. "It's not exactly appetizing." Cetricus Ra stares at me like he's trying to decide whether to leap across the table and throttle me. After a moment, he reaches to the side of his chair where his cane is propped. Ornately carved from a shimmering golden metal with an ominous black eye on the handle. It's the same cane I saw Cetricus Ra use during the fight at Dulce Base. I brace myself for an attack.
"The Eye of Thalok,"
Cetricus Ra says, noticing me eyeing the staff.
"Like Earth, it will one day be part of your inheritance."
Before I can ask a follow-up question, the obsidian eye in the cane's handle flashes. I flinch, but it quickly becomes clear that I'm not in any danger. Instead, it's Cetricus Ra who begins to convulse. Bands of red and purple light project from the Eye of Thalok and scan over his body. Although I don't exactly know how, I can sense energy moving from the cane into Cetricus Ra. He writhes and contorts as his skin peels away from his body, expanding outward and shifting, like a bubble forming in candle wax. When it's over, Cetricus Ra looks human. Actually, he looks like a movie star. He's assumed the form of a handsome older guy in his mid-40s, with immaculately arranged salt-and-pepper hair, soulful blue eyes, and just a modest amount of stubble. He's tall, but no longer intimidatingly so, and he's wearing a stylish blue suit and pressed dress shirt, casually open at the collar. Of his previous appearance, only the three lauric pendants remain, their cobalt jewels matching his shirt.
"Better?"
he asks, his usual scratchy voice replaced by this man's smooth baritone.
"What?"
I look at him, dumbfounded.
"Who are you supposed to be?"
"I choose this form for the humans," he explains. "Our research shows they're naturally drawn to middle-aged, Caucasian men of these specifications. Apparently, they find them leaderly and trustworthy."
"Why?" I try to gather my thoughts. "What do you mean it's for the humans?" Cedricus Ra gestures towards my plate.
"Eat, and I will answer your questions. That's not unreasonable, is it? I believe the humans call it quid pro quo."
I look down at my plate and the pale blob waiting for me there. I think about 6 and 9 and the rest of the guard and wonder what they would do in my situation. It seems like Cetricus Ra wants to spill his guts, so I should probably let him. Maybe, while he's trying to subtly win me over, he'll let slip the secret to beating the Mogadorians, if that even exists. Either way, taking a bite of the boiled slug on my plate seems like a small price to pay if it means gathering some important information. I shouldn't think of my situation as being held prisoner. It's more like I'm on a mission behind enemy lines. I'm a freaking spy. I pick up my knife and fork, cut a small square off the edge of the meat, and plop it into my mouth. There's hardly any taste at all. It's almost like chewing a wadded-up ball of notebook paper. It's the texture that really bothers me, the way the meat starts to fizz and melt as soon as it touches my tongue, breaking down so quickly that I don't even really chew. I can't help but think of the way Mogadorians disintegrate when they're killed and have to stop myself from gagging.
"It isn't what you're used to, but it's the best the Anubis is equipped to produce,"
Cetricus Ra says, almost apologetically.
"The food will improve once we've taken Earth."
I ignore him, not really caring about the finer points of Mogadorian cuisine. "I ate. Now answer my question." He inclines his head, looking charmed by my directness.
"I chose this form because the humans will find it comforting. It's what I will wear to accept surrender of their planet."
I gape at him. "They're not going to surrender to you." He smiles.
"Of course they will. Unlike the Lorik, who pointlessly fight against impossible odds, the humans have a rich history of subjugation. They appreciate demonstrations of superior force and will gladly accept the tenets of Mogadorian progress. And those who don't will perish."
"Mogadorian progress," I spit the words. "What are you even talking about? You're going to make everyone like you a mon—" I don't finish my question. I was going to call him a monster, but then I thought back to my vision. I callously ordered Six's execution right in front of John, Sam, and a crowd of people. What if something like Cetricus Ra is already lurking inside me?
"I believe there was at least one question in all that vitriol,"
Cetricus Ra says. He maintains his infuriating smile, made even worse now that he's wearing a handsome human face, and gestures towards my plate. I shovel down another bite of the horrible food. He clears his throat like he's about to give a speech.
"We share the same blood, granddaughter," which is why you will be spared the fate of those guard who foolishly oppose me. Because, unlike them, you are capable of change,
Cetricus Ra explains.
I may have been Loric once, but over the centuries I have made myself into something better. Once I control the Earth, I will have the power necessary to change the lives of billions. All they need to do is accept Mogadorian progress. Then my work will at last bear fruit.
I squint at him. Power? From where? Cetricus Ross smiles at me, touching the pendants that hang around his neck.
You will see when the time is right, child. Then you will understand.
I already understand, I reply. I understand that you are a disgusting, genocidal freak who gave himself a bad Mogadorian makeover. Cetricus Ross smiles flickers, and for a moment, I wonder if I've pushed my luck too far.
He sighs and drags his fingers across his throat, the skin of his assumed form parting to reveal the thick purple scar around his throat.
Pittacus Lore gave me this when he tried to kill me,
he says, his voice cold and level.
I was one of them. But he and the other elders cast me out, banished me from Lorien because of my ideas.
What? Did they not want to elect you supreme ruler or something?
Cetricus Ra passes his hand across his throat once again, and the scar tissue disappears.
They already had a ruler,
Cetricus Ra replies, his voice dropping lower, as if the memory makes him angry.
They just refused to admit it.
What's that supposed to mean?
This time, he doesn't make me take a bite of food. He's on a roll now.
My dear, the elders were ruled by the planet itself. Lorien made their choices for them. Who would be guard and who would be, say, pawn? They believed we should live as caretakers and let nature determine our fates. I disagreed. The legacies granted by Lorien are simply a resource, like anything else. Would you let the fish in the ocean dictate who is fit to eat them? Or allow the iron in the ground to decide when to be forged? Of course not.
I try to digest all this information and compare it with what I learned from Creighton and his letter.
You just wanted to be in control,
I say after a moment.
I wanted progress, he counters. The Mogadorians understood. Unlike the Loric, they were people ready to be elevated.
You're insane, I say, pushing my plate away. Done with this whole question-and-answer thing.
You are an unenlightened child,
he replies, that condescending patience back.
When your studies begin, when you see what I have accomplished for you and what the Loric have denied you, then you will understand. You will come to love and respect me.
I stand up, even though I have nowhere to go.
Cetricus Ra has been gentle with me so far, but it's been made crystal clear that I can only move around the sterile hallways of the Anubis as he allows it. If he wants to keep me here and force me to finish my dinner, he will. It would probably be smoother for me if I let all his distortions and half-truths go unchallenged. But I just can't do it. I think of 9, 6, and the others. I know they'd never hold their tongue when faced with this monster.
You destroyed our planet, and all you've ever accomplished is hurting people, I say, trying to mimic my grandfather's mocking patience.
You're a monster. I will never not hate you.
Cetricus Ra sighs, his handsome features creasing briefly in consternation.
Anger is the last refuge of the ignorant, he says, holding up his hand. Let me show you something they denied you, granddaughter.